What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 42. This is part 4 of our 5-part series on the 5 worst foods. And today we're going to be talking about donuts and everything going into that. And I recommend if you love donuts and you don't want them ruined for you to stop listening now, because I'm going to tear them apart, literally piece by piece. But first, let's do a little check-in. So, Tom, how's your week been?
Oh, it's been really good, actually. So last Thursday was the first farmer's market in Lodi, where I live.
That time of year.
Yep. So back to getting my like farm fresh eggs all the time. You know, it's kind of funny. Like, I've made friends with some of the people that I go to. I've been going to this egg guy every single Thursday during the farmer's market for the last couple of years. So it was nice to kind of catching up with him. And then there's a new stand there, and I was so happy that they're there. It's called Golden Acorn Farms. They're out in Amador County, like really like Northern California.
Okay.
It's the first time coming down to Lodi, and I'm so glad they did. So have you ever heard of forest-raised pork?
No.
Okay. So I'm going to show you a video.
You have piqued my interest.
Yeah. So instead of like pasture-raised pork, these are forest-raised pork. So they're living in a forest. They have on their property a fenced-in area, and they got these big, brown, hairy pigs.
Okay.
Not quite wild boar, because they don't have tusks, but they don't look like your traditional farm-raised pigs.
No, they don't look nice and sweet, that's for sure.
I was definitely not prepared for them to be there, because like their stuff is a little pricey, but obviously it has to be pricey, because it's high-quality stuff. So I bought some bones for bone broth, and I bought like a giant like pig's foot. I'm going to make bone broth with two, because there's a lot of skin on there, all that collagen.
Yep.
I haven't had a chance to do that yet, but the bone broth is delicious. Farmer's market's tomorrow, so I'm going to buy a bunch of, I don't know, pork chops and some bacon, some sausages.
Yeah, when you say expensive, how much is, like, say, a pork chop?
I don't remember pork chops. I remember the sausages were, like, $10 a pound. Mm. When you buy them at a grocery store, they're, like, $5 a pound. Okay. But that's, you know, farm-raised stuff, not...
Do they have an ingredient list for the sausages?
I haven't really looked into that.
Okay.
But everything else was... I mean, if they're raising them off of a forest like this, or eating mushrooms, or eating acorns, or eating...
Whatever they want.
Yeah, exactly what they should be eating.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw the pigs. They look healthy.
Healthy, yeah.
They don't look fat. They're running around and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm really looking forward to it.
How common is forest-raised pork?
I have never heard of forest-raised anything.
Have you talked to them?
Oh, I talked to them for about 15 minutes.
Did they say, like, they're unique?
They didn't really, I didn't talk to them about how unique they are,
okay.
But they were just telling me, like, so they have a big fenced-in area to keep out, you know, predators, and like a strong electrical fence around there, and they're just eating whatever they can, have to. During wintertime, they'll give them some feed, but like to supplement, because they have to.
They have to, yeah.
But other than that, yeah, they pretty much just live off the land.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know what you should do next time you go to the farmer's market? Shoot me a text, like, prices, what's going on, and if it looks good, I'll buy some for me.
Yeah, I just wasn't prepared. Like, most of the places there are cash only, and I only brought a little bit of cash. I wasn't expecting there to be, like, this gold mine.
Yeah, exactly. No, when you get hookups like this, you gotta take it.
Yeah, definitely can't wait to try their food. I mean, the bone broth was delicious.
How much were the bones?
$4 a pound.
Is that normal?
So, grass-fed beef, those bones are, like, $6 a pound.
Okay.
So, it's cheaper than that. And, like, standard beef is... like $3 a pound from a grocery store.
Okay, so a little more expensive.
Yeah, right in there. But I mean, forest raised is probably just as good as grass fed.
That's cool. That's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so I can't wait to try their meat, see what else I got. Probably get some bacon if they have it. it's just kind of weird buying meat at a farmer's market because it's really hot out and I'm like carrying that shit around. So I have to make sure they're my last stop.
Yeah. Well, you know, my wife pretty much eats damn near strictly pork.
Really?
Like she eats pork every day. And I like make her beef and like she like supplements with beef almost. But her like her backbone of her like quote unquote zero carb carnivore lifestyle is pork. She loves pork. She can eat pork 24/7, 365.
I mean, I eat bacon all the time, but other than that, pork chops aren't really that good. I
don't know. Oh, she loves it.
Yeah. I mean, I do sausages quite a bit, like bratwurst, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do pork every day.
No, I couldn't either. But she does. Yeah, it's just her jam. So I'm like, cool, man. So maybe, I mean, the pork I get's good, but I would like to know how much that is. If it's a reasonable price, I'll definitely pick up some.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'll let you know.
Yeah, please let me know. That's cool. That's a good little find.
Yeah, so what's new with you this week?
This week, it's pretty much the same exact thing as always. Like, my life's Groundhog's Day for sure. But I was just, I don't know, doing research for this podcast just makes me super thankful we do this. So, obviously, we're doing it on donuts. And, I mean, you know this. I've been on this anti-nutrient kick, like, before it was cool. Like, I've been screaming about anti-nutrients for a while.
You hate Rhonda Patrick because of this.
That's funny. I'm glad you brought that up. This is going to tie into all this shit. Yeah, so I've been definitely, because I have read into anti-nutrients and I know a little bit about them, but I know way more today than I did last week about anti-nutrients and specifically about lectin. And if you check our website about this post, I'll have, literally I just counted 22 links that are going to be associated with all different type of lectin studies and research. So I've read every single one of them, and it's just a lot of work this week, but I love it because it's just, we wouldn't do this. Like, we wouldn't do this type of research if this wasn't part of, like, our job.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And this is really good information to know because, like, especially when it comes to lectins, lectins are everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah. Yes, they are literally everywhere. Yeah. So it was a trip, man. I was just so happy. And I had a run-in with a lady at my job, so she's a tech there, and she doesn't know pretty much anything about me, that I'm a zero-carb guy, that I'm passionate about health, nutrition, all that stuff, right? And just kind of in passing, and she might be listening to this now, she mentioned, like, what about my diet was. And sometimes I don't even like to go down that road. I'm just like, oh, I just kind of eat whatever. But I was like, oh, I just eat meat. Like, I just, you know, put it out there, you know, zero-carb. She's like, wait, what? She's like, oh, so you're a carnivore. And like that like piqued my interest because she knew the term.
Yeah.
Right? So that she already knew more than the vast majority of people.
She wasn't weirded about by you.
No, just saying it like piqued her interest. Okay. Right? Like her eyes kind of lit up and I was like, oh shit, all right, cool. So we can have maybe talk about this. And so we did. And kind of went down the rabbit hole about X, Y, and Z. And she's like, okay, well, what about like, you know, protein and the kidneys? Like, isn't protein really hard in your kidneys? And I was like, no, it's not. And actually, pull out your phone. I was like, I have a whole podcast on protein in the kidneys. Oh, cool, cool. So she pulls it up, did that. And then she had another question about CoQ10. And I was like, oh, I have a whole episode on CoQ10. Here you go.
What was she thinking about CoQ10?
I don't know how CoQ10 got brought up, but it got brought up. Something about, I think something with her son, but I don't remember. About a supplement she gave her son. She gave her son CoQ10, I think. And I was like, okay, cool. And it almost made me kind of like proud that we honestly have like a library now of so much information that we've produced. Yeah, like if someone has a question, we can like go here.
Yeah.
It's not a library. It's not some like article, some other. No, we made this. I know the information's good. 100%. I stand behind this stuff 100%. And I'm not saying we're always right. You know, we learn more things as we go. But as far as the information we have at hand now, this is like our best guess, you know? And it was just really cool. So just turning on to the podcast, and hopefully she's going to listen to it. And I told her the first one she should listen to is industrial seed oils because she uses canola oil when she cooks. So I was like, you should just definitely stop doing that. And
yeah, that's definitely one of the lowest hanging fruit.
Yeah, right? Like if you're going to start somewhere, start there. And hopefully she does. Hopefully she's listening now. You know who you are if you are. And it was just really cool, man. It just made me proud of this. And just get me even more motivated and more just obsessed about this shit just to keep going, you know? I guess we all need that every once in a while.
Yeah, it's definitely good news to get recognized. Like, oh, hey, we're doing the right thing.
Yeah, for sure. And these people have all these questions, and it's almost like people just don't know. There's so much misinformation out there, you know?
And I kind of forget about how much people don't know because we've been so involved with this for so long. And it's like, what do you mean you're still using industrial seed oils?
Like, what?
I'm just thinking nobody uses that shit anymore, but no, everybody still does.
Everybody still does, yeah. But she did, so I think she listens to Joe Rogan's podcast every once in a while. I think that she heard somebody, most likely Sean Baker, talk about carnivore. And she said, yeah, somebody was on there, like Rhonda, talking about something. And I was like, oh, Rhonda Patrick talking about sulforaphane? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, this, this, and this. I was like, if I ever had a conversation with her, I would not agree with everything she said.
I don't know how you ever listened to her podcast. That's in rough. The first place, because like you, that was one of the first ones you told me to listen to.
I know.
I listened to one episode and I like almost fell asleep driving. I was like, it's so boring. I can't do this. I'm going to die.
But it's a really nerdy podcast.
It is. But I mean, she needs to have somebody like some comedic relief or change her tone. Like,
yeah,
I'm sure it's all great information. I just can't listen to it.
Yeah. I blame her. There was a while there where I was eating raw broccoli, and I blame her for that. Like, still hold a grudge.
I blame you for that, because you got me to do it, like, twice, and I was like, this just does not taste good.
No, it doesn't taste good. Yeah, it was rough, and you know me, like, if I hear something like, oh, this is going to be good for you, this is going to be, this will, like, give you an edge, I was like, fuck it. Like, raw broccoli it is, every day. It was, like, raw broccoli every day for weeks, and it finally kind of kicked in, like, this ain't right. You know what I mean? And then it kind of, obviously, I went down the rabbit hole now, and I know way more today than I did then. And I know, here's my new advice, don't eat raw broccoli, but...
Well, don't eat any, like, vegetables raw.
No, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
Cook it. There's no point. We can't break down the cellulose walls. Like, you're not getting any nutrients from it. Just where some, I guess, some fiber, which is not a nutrient, but yeah.
And then all the anti-nutrients are still there, so at least cooking will kill some of them off.
It will. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, I mean, I guess that kind of ties into this podcast pretty good, because a big chunk of it is going to be on anti-nutrients, and the big one in donuts is going to be a lectin, and you all, maybe you hear the term lectin, you don't know what that is, but you do. 100%, you've heard of a lectin before, and you've heard of gluten, I bet. So gluten is a lectin, and that's the thing we're going to be talking about primarily with donuts.
All right, so when we're talking about donuts, we're not just talking about strictly donuts, cinnamon rolls, cakes, cookies, cupcakes, muffin. Basically, anything that you're finding in the bakery is going to fit under the same category. So first off, they're made with genetically modified wheat flour sprayed with glyphosate. We already talked about glyphosate in our podcast on toxins. It's horrible for you. It's poking holes in your stomach, making it so like a lot of other food particles can get through your intestinal wall and into your body, causing all sort of autoimmune issues.
And how much were those people just, they just want some money for glyphosate?
So I believe there's been 3 court cases all in California that different people have won based on non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's a type of cancer, all related to glyphosate. And it's under $3 billion, but somewhere around there.
Crazy amount of money.
Yeah, the last couple won $2 billion, $1 billion each. Another gentleman won... I don't know if winning is the right term here.
I know, yeah. You catch cancer, here, but here's some money.
Yeah, like, oh, you're going to die in a few years, but hey, at least
you'll be rich.
Money. Yeah. Was 280-something, 284, and I'm not sure about the other case.
Mm. So it's all bad.
Oh, it's all bad. But it's the EPA says it's safe, so it must be.
Of course, yeah.
Wheat flour contains a lot of gluten, which also leads to leaky gut and autoimmune issues. So that, with glyphosate, is a nice 1-2 combo for autoimmune issues, leaky gut. And then that, once that happens, a whole lot of other problems can pop up too.
So much. And just to be clear, like wheat, they spray all wheat with glyphosate.
Yeah, is there organic wheat?
I don't know.
I don't know if I've ever seen organic wheat anywhere.
It's pretty hard to find if it is, but the vast majority of like cereals and all that, like whole wheat bread, all that crap is going to contain this wheat and glyphosate.
Yeah, and just think of it this way. Like, all right, you have cereal or oatmeal for breakfast. Problem right there. Yep. You're going to have a sandwich for lunch. Problem yep. right there. Then you're going to have steak and a dinner roll with dinner.
Yeah, that's 3 hits.
Mm-hmm. Every day, 365 days out of the year. And if you're snacking... You're snacking on some Doritos.
Granola bar.
Same thing.
Yep.
1-2 combo with all those foods.
Exactly.
So you're just over-consuming it. So donuts, there's a lot of sugar in them or some sugar substitute. We already went through how bad sugar is for you. They're fried in industrial seed oils. We already went over how bad that is for you. Like, it's just, like, the absolute worst food. If I was going to make somebody get sick and fat, this is what I would give them, is just donuts. That's pretty much it.
It is exactly, yeah, exactly what you would give to make someone fat. And you want to know what we give, like, the ratios of, like, carbs to fat in and protein in a donut is the exact same ratios of, like, chow feed we give rats to make them fat.
Oh, it makes sense.
Like, this is fat rat food. It's what we're feeding people.
So they're just getting donuts, but probably don't taste that good?
Exactly. It's just, like, flavorless donuts.
Yeah.
But it's the same macros as far as sugars, fats, and proteins. It's pretty much get a ton of fat, get a ton of sugar, get pretty much just no protein, and welcome to obese. You know what I mean? Welcome to obese. Welcome to Obeseville.
Well, just carbohydrates and fats, like, in general, is a perfect combo to make you fat. But these refined carbs with, like, these really shitty industrial seed oils is the absolute worst way to do it.
Yeah, the absolute worst way.
So the other things that we talked about, there is at least kind of maybe some benefit to them. But this one, there's no positive that I can take away from making donuts.
No, nothing.
Like, I can't think of one reason why I should do it. I mean, they're delicious and they're cheap.
It just sucks that they taste so good.
Yeah. Oh, every time I thought about this podcast, I was like, man, I could go for a maple bar right now.
Oh, a good maple bar. I like maple bar with, let's say, cream filled.
Oh,
Oh, man, shoot me right now. Just, I don't care if I get diabetes, right? But obviously I do because I don't eat donuts. But I understand they really are really good. And it makes sense. They're designed to, like, just completely mess our satiety signals and make us just hungry, hungry, hungry. So, yeah, I guess just to start with just the sugar. So, of course, there's a ton of sugar in donuts. And the primary risk associated with sugar, like we talked about in the soda episode, is the insulin rise and then the diseases associated with that insulin rise. And that's pretty much, like, what causes diabetes. So, like, diabetes in a nutshell is the body reacts to sustained levels of insulin. So elevated insulin all the time. Like Tom just said, you know, you have cereal in the morning, a sandwich for lunch, and then you have a little muffin with dinner. You're getting 3 insulin spikes all day. So your insulin's always elevated. So your body responds to this by down-regulating cellular receptors for insulin. So something like, you might hear the term GLUT4. That's a real common, like, glucose receptor, how our cells will get glucose into them. So that GLUT4 will be expressed less. So elevated insulin causing the problem. So something that keeps insulin higher for longer would be a great recipe to induce diabetes. And that's exactly what happens when you pair fat with sugar. That's why, like, it's such a big deal. It's why you won't find it anywhere in nature for the most part. Except in, like, breast milk, but that's a little different because obviously you're a baby, you're trying to grow, you're trying to get fat, right? You need that fat to stay alive. But I talked about the hormone GIP. Well, I guess it's a peptide. It's glucose-dependent insulinotropic peptide or polypeptide in the episode with sugar. And I brought that up because that's going to be relevant in this episode, is because dietary fat paired with sugar potentiates GIP response to glucose. So dietary fat, no matter how healthy it is, has a magnifying effect on GIP release, meaning there's more insulin for a longer period of time being released. So the higher the GIP goes, the higher the insulin goes, which is all bad. And that kind of course, with donuts, that's a problem, right? You're getting the sugar and you're getting the fat from the industrial seed oils. But this even goes into something like a grass-fed beef burger can become unhealthy if you pair it with a carb source. So it doesn't have to be processed carbs. It can be something like a French fry. Like, how often do you have a hamburger and French fries? You know, all the time. And so that in itself is bad. So that combo of fat and sugar is a horrible thing for insulin.
So the reason it keeps your insulin level so high is because now your cells have choices on what it can use for fuel. Because if you have a lot of blood sugar or a lot of blood glucose, that's going to lead to your triglyceride levels being also high. So now cells have the choice. They can use one or the other. And since insulin's been high for so long, the cells down-regulate. So they have fewer cell receptors for the insulin. So, like, that's just a perfect combo. It's like, oh, well, they're both just going to stay high because these cells aren't as efficient at using the glucose, but it wants to use the glucose first. But now it's got choices.
Exactly. So
it's just a horrible combination. Your cells are confused. It's put in a situation that it was never supposed to be in.
See, that's the thing. It was never supposed to be in that situation. Like, you're never, like, the whole idea of a dinner plate we have today, which is a protein source and a starch and maybe like a dessert, that's a new thing. Like, a very, very new thing. Back in the day, like, let's say we're out hunting, you kill a mammoth, you eat the mammoth, it's just meat. Let's say we're walking around and we find like a raspberry bush. We don't sit on these raspberries for 2 weeks until we get a kill and then pair them with dinner. Like, oh, this will taste good as a dessert. No, they just ate all the raspberries. You know what I mean? Like, this whole pairing things together is not, I mean, it's new.
Yeah, you're either getting protein and fat or you're getting just carbs.
Yes.
It's never all three of them combined.
Never.
I don't even know if there is a natural, I mean, the only thing that has all three in it would be breast milk, but you're only consuming that for a very short period of your life.
Yeah, and in a very unique period in your life when you just got born, and you better hope you get these nutrients or bye-bye baby, you know, you're done.
And that's when, like, pretty much the only time in life where growing is essential. You want to grow as fast as you possibly can at that age.
So that high insulin's a good thing.
Yeah, you don't want to be growing when you're in your 40s, because if you're growing in your 40s, you're growing outward.
Yeah, no one's getting taller in their 40s for sure. So the other component of donuts, or besides the sugar, is the flour. And you, like, what is flour? Flour is pretty much just, you get wheat, you get like wheat, and you just ground it down into like powder. That's what flour is. That's all it is. And
who thought of that?
I don't know.
That always amazes me that somebody saw like some wheat out there and was like, you know what? I'm gonna ground this up and I'm gonna eat it.
Yeah, if I mix it with some oils, yeah, it'll work. It's weird.
Like, there's a lot of processing that goes on there. I don't know how they figured that out.
They must have been hungry.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, they must have been real hungry. Yeah, but you get real creative when you're hungry. Yeah. But that makes the carbs in donuts even worse, right? Because they're processed now. And, like, processing carbs, which simply means, like, mechanically grinding them down, makes them even more fattening. And that's obviously what flour is ground up wheat. So, doing research for this, there's a study with mice. And mice were given two diets. So the standard carb-based rat chow, which is an appropriate diet for a mouse, and then a Western-style diet with sugar and fat combined in the same feed. So they measured the growth of the mice for about 3 months, and the mice fed the normal chow grew at a normal rate. Everything was normal, they didn't become obese. But the mice fed the chow consisting of carbs and fat became obese and developed fatty livers. So that shows a combo of sugar and fat are all bad. From a metabolic standpoint, it's just not good. But what happens if we process the carbs? So all they did to the normal rat chow was grind up the pellets. They ground them into a powder. And like that's what we do when we make flour from wheat or almonds, for example. Nothing else changed in the composition of the pellets. Same amount of carbs, same amount of calories. All they did, they mechanically refined the pellets. So what do you think happened? The previously healthy chow became just as bad as the fat and carb combo. The rats became obese. So the refining of the pellets broke up the whole food cellular structure of the pellets and made the glucose much more accessible. Which is crazy. That's all it took to make these mice fat.
So not even changing the chemicals.
Calories in, calories out method?
Yeah.
What about, how do you answer this?
I mean, what's going on there? It's just now it's, since it's already like pre-digested, pre-broken down, it's just hitting your system faster.
So fast, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And speed matters when you're talking about carbohydrates. So when these things hit your body super fast, it causes a way more insulin spike, and that's what happened with these mice. And okay, right, so this is a mice study, I get it. But what about a human study? So in this study, they fed people three types of bread, and they measured their GIP and insulin response post-meal. And remember, GIP is just that polypeptide that kind of preps our pancreas to produce insulin and preps our fat cells to expand in response to insulin. So the breads were processed white bread, rye bread that was processed with added fiber, and unprocessed whole kernel rye bread. So what were the results? So the white bread causes the highest rise in GIP and insulin. Makes sense. That's what we would expect. The processed rye bread with fiber was a close second, and the whole unprocessed rye bread was a distant third. So the whole rye bread caused the least insulin and the least GIP. Okay, that makes sense. But what that really showed was the added fiber in the processed rye bread didn't do anything to mitigate the effects of processing on rising GIP and insulin. So it just shows how powerful the effects of processing carbs is. In natural foods, fiber is paired with whole food-based carbs. Think of like a whole apple. It helps reduce insulin response and blood glucose rise, but not in processed food. So if you're ever in the grocery store and you see like a granola bar that says like added fiber, or like some muffin that says added fiber and it's supposed to be like some benefit, it's not doing anything for the glucose or GIP rise in the body.
You know, all that extra fiber is just allowing that stuff to move out of your system a little bit longer. So it's probably kind of helping a little bit get rid of that poison a little bit faster. But as far as blood sugar releases, then, no.
No, the
No
processing
effect.
carb is super powerful and it overtakes any sort of added fiber for sure. And the only thing with this study is it kind of paints a picture that whole rye bread is the way to go, right? It's like, okay, so everyone go out there, eat whole wheat bread. Everyone knows whole wheat bread's better than white bread. And that's, I just don't think that's the case. Like there's more nuance to it and it's about to get a little more complicated.
If all you're worried about is your blood sugar, then yes, that is true. But what we're about to talk about, that's not really the whole story.
No. Now, before we talk about that, let's have a little ad first about our meal plans. So here's a little info from me. TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com, whole food nutrition rediscovered. If you are struggling looking to improve your health or optimize your lifestyle, you can sign up for a custom meal plan on our website, TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. Back to today's topic. All right, so now comes a big topic of the show. We're going to be talking about gluten. And that's really the problem with these whole breads, is that they contain more anti-nutrients. You want to talk about like why are anti-nutrients even there? Like what's that about?
So everything that's living wants to survive. So plants don't want to die. If, you know, plants need some sort of defense mechanism, so some caterpillar or some human doesn't come along and just eat all of them. Because if that were the case, they would be extinct.
Yeah, so eat all of them without paying some sort of price.
They wouldn't be around. This is how crazy smart plants are. So there was a study that I read about in the Dorito effect. I wanted to throw that in last week. I just couldn't find it. This is such an interesting story. So there was a study with parasitic wasps and caterpillars. So these parasitic wasps, if they were just left in alone with the caterpillar, couldn't find them.
You mean like in a room, like a controlled
In
setting?
a control setting, couldn't find them. So it makes sense. The caterpillar should develop some sort of evolutionary advantage, so it couldn't be detected easily by the wasp. You know, it's not giving out any scent. And then they put plants in there, and it wouldn't be a plant that the caterpillar would eat. So, no plant, the wasp still can't find the caterpillar. And they put in a different type of plant, and as soon as that caterpillar starts eating the plant, wasp finds it, no problem.
Okay.
So, what's happening there is as soon as that caterpillar starts eating the leaf of the plant releases a compound out into the air that attracts the wasps, and the wasp comes over and kills a caterpillar. So that's how crazy smart these plants are. They're like, oh hey, I'm getting eaten. Oh hey, you eat this thing that's eating me. Come over here, right here, right here.
Yeah.
Skip, you know, just waving in that wasp to come get the killer of the plant.
I think that's so cool.
I did not know plants were so damn smart.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy.
It is. No, it's super crazy. Yeah. I knew plants like kind of talk to each other through their like root system. Like I knew that. Like I knew like if you get say a field of plants and you kind of mess with them on the right, say like 100 feet to the right, eventually that signal will go all the way to the plants on the left. Like they'll prep them like, hey, shit's coming down and you'll see the plants change. But I didn't know they could tell the wasp, like, hey, bro, save me.
Yeah, they're just releasing a compound into the air that attracts the wasp.
And it's funny, the wasp developed that, like, relationship with plants. Without them, the wasp would die too, right? It would starve.
Oh, exactly. It's a
Yeah.
symbiotic relationship for everybody except for the caterpillar.
Yeah, the poor caterpillar is catching L's left and right. But yeah, that's cool, man. It's really cool. And that's what we're talking about. Like, these plants don't want to die, and that's what anti-nutrients are there for. And there's a lot of anti-nutrients. Next week, I'm going to talk about soy and specifically soy formula. And I'm going to go into a lot of different anti-nutrients because guess what? Soy has all of them in it and they're all in their very most like toxic forms. But the big one that's in donuts is lectin. And well, it's gluten and gluten is a lectin. So lectins are just a protein found in plants there's over 100 known sources of lectins. So big ones are like tomatoes, soybeans, all beans have lectins in it. Beets, wheat, rice, not white rice though. That brown rice everyone says is like super healthy. Have fun with your gluten. White rice strips that germ off the rice so there's none left.
That's why the communities or the cultures that have been eating rice forever don't eat brown rice. They eat white rice. They figured that shit out a long ass time ago. And stupid white people came along and were like, no, you gotta eat the whole thing. Yes. You gotta eat all of, you have to make brown rice, not white rice.
That ancestral knowledge, they know. Because, like, oh, my grandpa's grandpa. You know what I mean? Like, they're not listening to some dumb dietitian who's like 22, just graduated from Harvard.
Yeah, that's so funny to me.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. So, like, peanuts, all nuts are very high in lectins. Coffee, another one is cacao, so chocolate, which kind of sucks because as far as in our world, we don't have a lot of, like, healthy sweet options. You know what I mean? Because it's just in nature, there really isn't a lot. So, like, a real good dark chocolate bar is something we could kind of get behind.
Yeah.
Loaded with lectins, so it kind of sucks. And it's also in fruits as well. So big too, like grapes. Grape seeds specifically are very high in lectins, and they're very reactive lectins. And pomegranate as well, very high in lectins. And that's not it. There's lectins in damn near everything, but those are kind of the bigger ones I pulled out. So, like, how are lectins bad? So lectins are proteins that bind to the carbohydrates in the outer wall of our cellular membranes, compromising their structure and their ability to function properly. And this will eventually lead to cell death. And this is especially problematic in our intestines, where our brush border is located. And our brush border is made up of finger-like projections called microvilli. And this is where all of our nutrients are absorbed. Like in our GI tract, in our small intestines, all the vitamins, minerals, fats, proteins, all that stuff is all absorbed in our brush border. So keeping that intact and keeping that healthy is super important. And so this is where lectins come into play. When lectins bind to the villi, they make the cell wall rigid and incapable of doing its job. And this will eventually lead to a shortening of the brush border and an overall decrease in our ability to absorb nutrients, like the vitamins and minerals I was just talking about. So over time, this damage to the intestines leads to a condition termed leaky gut. And we're going to go into that way more in a little bit. And so this happens when the lectins have killed enough of our villi and their origin point called crypt cells, leading to physical holes in our intestines, allowing undigested particles and toxins to leak into our bloodstream unprocessed. And something that's actually a real key point is that they get down to the crypt cell. You can think of a crypt cell almost like a stem cell, because our brush border is replaced, I think, every like 4 days. Like, it's just, it gets damaged very easily. They're very fragile, right? So having the top of our brush border kind of get brushed off when the food passes by isn't that big of a deal. But when these lectins get down to the, well, it's not that big of a deal. Think of it like grass. When a cow grazes grass, it kind of takes that top layer, but it's not going down to the root. You know what I mean? So the grass gets stimulated and the grass grows back. But when these lectins attack that crypt cell, bye-bye cell. You know what I mean? That's where the damage really comes in.
And just a note on lectins. So, yeah, they're in all these different plants. They're primarily found in either the seed or the skin of the plant. That way, because, like, the part of the plant that we eat generally is where all the seeds are. That's, like, how plants are able to reproduce. So they don't want their, basically, way of having children getting eaten and then not being able to reproduce. So that's why the lectins are on the skin. So that's the first line of defense. And also on the seeds, because they don't want you eating the seeds.
That's their baby.
Yeah, so I mean, if you are trying to avoid them, definitely cook all your vegetables, de-skin them, and don't eat the seed. I mean, that's usually not a problem with fruit. Nobody eats
the seeds usually.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't eat the seed of a apricot or
Good luck.
Yeah, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, the only one that we do eat, I guess, is pomegranate. That's the only part that's edible.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised.
Full of lectins.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it is. So one of the big things that are full of lectins are beans. So I'm sure most people know out there that kidney beans are toxic. And I'll link to a study where people got symptoms of food poisoning, like throwing up, diarrhea, just pain, abdomen pain, from eating just 4 like half cooked kidney beans. So pretty kidney beans that were soaked but not boiled. And that just shows how much processing you have to do with these damn beans to make them edible. Like, what do you have to do to beans to even eat them?
Soak them overnight, rinse them off thoroughly, not just run water over a little bit.
Yeah, not half-ass.
You rinse that shit off for like 10 to 15 minutes, and then after you rinse them off, then you cook them.
And not just cook them, boil them.
Yes.
Like, that water has to be boiling.
That's three steps that, I mean, that seems like a lot to do.
Yes, exactly. Like, that should show you, like, that's how toxic these lectins are. And the only reason you have to do this with beans is because of the lectins. Like, that's what you're removing when you cook them like this. And, I mean, just to show how bad, like, lectins can be, if you're feeding rats a diet of just 1% total calories, if 1% is made up of raw kidney beans, the rat will die in 2 weeks.
That's crazy.
That's a crazy little stat. And again, I'm linking all these studies, so check out the site, they'll be there. It's just, it's a trip, man. And the lectins that have not been cooked away are unlikely to be affected by our normal digestive processes. So, like, lectins strongly resist breakdown by enzymes in the gut, and at least 60% remain biologically active in our small intestines. So that just shows you, like, the food you're cooking, cook it thoroughly. Like, you really have to. And that's a problem, right? Because now they're in our small intestines and they're active. So that's when they're able to do their thing and cause leaky gut. Now these lectins get into our blood and they can bind to various cells throughout our whole body, right? They bind to the sugars, like the glycoproteins and the glycolipids on the outside of our cells. And it's not just like, oh, you're going to get like a stomach ache, you're going to get a headache. Like, no, these things can go anywhere. So I read a study that lectins was actually tied to infertility, because the lectins, they bound to the endometrium in the lining of the uterus. So in this study, women suffering from endometriitis were put on a gluten-free diet for 12 months. At the 12-month follow-up, 156 patients, which was 75%, there's about 200 patients total in this study, reported statistically significant change in painful symptoms. And they concluded that painful symptoms of endometriosis decreased after 12 months on a gluten-free diet. And you would never make that connection with gluten and infertility, right?
No.
Like, you wouldn't think it's that serious. So people hear gluten, they're like, whatever.
Oh, it's funny, is even the medical community thinks, like, celiac disease, like, there's...
It's, like, made up.
Yeah, it's a myth to certain doctors out there. Yeah. Which is so infuriating, just especially knowing all this about lectins and how bad gluten is for you.
Yes.
It's designed to be bad for you. What do you mean it's not bad for you?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what are you talking about? Like, this is what it's here for. And the sad thing is, like, the amount of lectins we eat is actually increasing because of selective breeding and genetic modification to crops. So, like, what crops do you think resist bugs and insects better?
Oh, the ones that have more plant defense mechanisms in there.
What are those called?
Oh, those would be lectins.
Yeah, it's like, damn, that's crazy. So literally, like, we are genetically modifying crops, like tomatoes, a big one, and to make them contain more lectins because you get a better yield. No one's worrying about the downfield effect from the people eating the tomatoes. They're just worried that now I have more tomatoes each, or more potatoes, more tomatoes each season.
Yeah, we were kind of talking about that a little bit last week. Like,
yeah.
Well, that's what, unfortunately, that's what farmers are doing. They care more about the yield than the actual nutrients that go into the fruits and vegetables. So, yeah, of course they want more lectins in them. Yeah. Not to mention, oh, yeah, those are horrible for us.
Yeah, it's horrible for us. And I get it, right? It's a money game. You got to put, you know, food on your family's plate. You got bills to pay. But it just sucks that we're all paying this price. I mean, I really went down the rabbit hole with this lectin thing. So I learned that lectins, and this makes perfect sense, can stimulate the insulin receptor themselves. So this was, and again, these studies aren't new. This was a study from 1983. Like, this stuff's been known. So this studied active fat storage, so lipogenesis, from wheat germ agglutinin. So when you hear gluten, what they really mean is wheat germ agglutinin. That's what the lectin actually is, but the short term is called gluten, because no one's walking around saying I'm allergic to wheat germ agglutinin every day. You know what I mean? So they studied the active fat storage from wheat germ agglutinin and insulin, and insulin had a normal response. Insulin plus lectin resulted in 5 times more conversion of glucose to fat, so it just potentiated it, made it more. But just giving lectin from wheat gluten alone resulted in over 4 times more insulin being produced. So more insulin is produced over longer periods of time. And this property was also shared by other insulinomimetic lectins. And now I've just written these, I've never actually pronounced them, such as concanavalin A and wax bean agglutinin. And the property of producing persistent, this property from these lectins produce persistent bioactivation, which is not shared by insulin itself, since removal of the unbound hormone results in termination of bioactivation. But persistent bioactivation caused by lectin binding is a consequence of lectin adsorbed to external cell surface. So I'll break that down a little bit. So when insulin binds to, hormones work in pulses, right? I don't care if it's testosterone, insulin, estrogen, whatever. They're not always on. They pulse on, they pulse off, they pulse on, they pulse off. So when insulin binds to something, say you need a carbohydrate, says, hey, store this fat now. 5 minutes later, insulin's down. Okay, we're good, right? This shit, this gluten adsorbs to it. What that means is it kind of stuck to the cell surface of these cells. And it just locked that insulin receptor to the on position for an extended period of time. I'm talking 3 to 5 hours. That's what the study said. And so it's even worse than insulin alone. And we know how bad insulin is.
Oh, insulin's basically the cause of every...
It's a driver.
Yeah, of every chronic disease out there.
And this makes it worse. You know that?
That's crazy. I mean, now we know why there's so many more insulin-related diseases, and all of them are on the rise.
Yes, exactly. And now we talk about, like, Asians... Like, say, typical Chinese have a bunch of white rice, and they're usually fairly lean, fairly skinny. Like, oh, but if rice causes diabetes, what about X, Y, and Z? And there's way more to that, but this has to be a part of it as well.
Yeah, they don't have the lectins in the white rice.
They don't have lectins in the white rice. Exactly, right? So they're getting that normal insulin pulse. They're not getting this extended insulin pulse all the time. And that's really the problem here. You know what I mean? Like, your body can handle a lot. Our body is very adaptable. Like, we wouldn't have won evolution, because look around, guess what? We won. You know what I mean? If our body wasn't so adaptable, you know?
Yeah, we got people living on all sorts of different climates. We got people living in the tropics. We got people living in the snow. We got people living everywhere.
And you got people eating God knows what. And yeah. Everyone's, you know, alive. You know what I mean? So another thing that lectins can cause, which I did not know as well, is heartburn. So in our stomach, mast cells secrete histamine. And then histamine then leads to HCL production. So lectins can bind to mast cells and stimulate the histamine release, increasing stomach acid. And this is a reason why low-carb diets can reduce acid reflux so much. Because typically when you go on a low-carb diet, it cuts the exposure to lectins. Because what's like the first things you cut out when you go low-carb?
Bread, usually bread, pasta, first cereal, thing. Oatmeal, yeah.
Exactly. So I have a study said that this data suggests that a very low carbohydrate diet in obese individuals with GERD, and you can think of GERD as just like really aggressive acid reflux, really aggressive heartburn, significantly reduces distal esophageal acid exposure and improves symptoms. So if you're suffering from GERD or just like significant heartburn, low carb is the way to go, and cutting out lectins is a way to go. But there's more. Like, lectins can also be attributed to stomach ulcers. The 3 main pathogenic factors for peptic ulcers are acid stimulation, failure of the mucosa defense layer, and abnormal bacterial proliferation. And all those are theoretically linked to lectins.
So do you think the increased HCL production is our body's way of trying to like destroy as many of those lectins as possible? Because the acid should break down the proteins.
Well, no, lectins bind to it, and it's like they mimic, like insulin and mimic insulin, they mimic those mast cells, but they don't release, they coat it, and it turns it on for a very long period of time. That's okay. What happens.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So your stomach is sensing the proteins, but it's not...
There's no proteins.
Okay.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And just think of it that way. Our stomach really designed to... Well, the acid's there for, like, a bacterial barrier, so we can eat, like, raw shit and not die, right? The stomach's going to kill a lot of the bacteria. But it's really designed to break down proteins. Like, we need an acidic stomach to make pepsinogen into pepsin, right? That's really part of the game plan. But these people are eating wheat. There's shit protein in wheat, but your stomach is producing enough acid to break down a steak. You know what I mean? Like, that's a problem. And then that mucosa layer that protects your stomach is broken down. And then when that mucosa layer is broken down, the bacteria can get in there and cause Like, we've heard of it's SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth. Like, that can happen from lectins as well when that mucosal layer gets kind of broken down. So, because that's the first layer that gets broken down that causes leaky gut, is that mucosal layer. Like, that has to get broken down, and lectins do that. That's crazy, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's attacking us from every different level possible.
Yes. It's crazy.
So attacking our stomach, attacking our small intestine.
Like, the first spot it hits, man, it hits it hard. It really does. This is something I have to... I guess I've been wrong in the past, like, technically. So I've always said the anti-nutrients don't exist in animal products. I think I'm sure I've told you that.
I've never really thought of it because animals can either run away or they got claws and teeth and they will fight back.
Exactly.
So, like, why would they
need them? Exactly, yeah. Right? And that's true technically. But lectins do exist in animal products. They do. And that kind of makes sense if you think of lectins as just proteins. Like, what is a steak predominantly? Fat and protein?
Yeah.
There's going to be some proteins in there that are lectins. But don't let some, I don't know, vegetarian or vegan website kind of scare you. Like, oh, lectins are in meat too, because they're not the same. So the lectins in animal products don't have the same response that plant ones do. So plant-based lectins are uniquely capable of damaging our GI tract and causing an immune response, which is key to developing an autoimmune issue. So here's a little information from this study that I have on there. And again, it's all on the website. So here we report that certain plant lectins, in contrast to others, can trigger human basophils, which is like a white blood cell, to release IL-4 and IL-3 of the 16 lectins studied. And then it's just a bunch of things. Levels as high as those obtained by stimulation with anti-IgE antibodies, lectins with high IL-4 inducing capacity trigger the release of IL-13 and histamine, where lectins with low or missing IL-4 inducing capacity did not or minimally induce the other mediators. And that sentence is all convoluted, but what it meant is that, yes, the lectins are in this protein, like this animal protein, but there's not a lot, and they don't induce the same response as plant proteins. And that's what matters, you know?
Your body's not responding to it as it's a foreign invader, like it is like normal lectins from a plant.
It knows this, exactly. It knows what this is because it's seen it before. Lectins have also been tied to like mental disorders. So something like Parkinson's disease has been tied to lectins. And when I first heard this, I thought this was crazy. Hey, did you know they actually cut the vagus nerve of people? You know the vagus nerve that goes from our gut to our brain?
Yeah.
You know that's a procedure where they cut that?
For what disorder? Because that seems like a...
Parkinson's.
Okay. Wow, I did not know they did that because that's...
Sounds crazy.
That's how you turn on the like fight or flight to rest and digest. How you switch from sympathetic to auto...
Yeah, the vagus nerve is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very... I didn't know that... When I first saw it, I was like, no, they don't. They do. So that is something that they do. And so lectins can ascend to the brain through the vagus nerve and affect our brain, obviously. So what they did, they cut the vagus nerve and the risk of developing Parkinson's disease dropped 40% in these people. So a recent Danish study showed that vagotomy, which is just the cutting of the vagus nerve, resulted in 40% lower incidence of Parkinson's disease over 20 years. Differences in inherited sugar structures of gut and neuronal cell surfaces may make some individuals more susceptible in this conceptual disease etiology model. And that just shows that some people are more susceptible to lectins than others, but like they can travel up the vagus nerve to our brains.
Yeah, that's pretty scary. I was thinking
that is scary.
Like I was thinking our brain, blood-brain barrier should protect us against that, but I mean, if what lectins do is they get through barriers, then I'm guessing they can get through that one.
Yes, that's exactly what they're designed to do. Yeah, and I'm going to talk about in a little bit too how the pharmaceutical industry wanted to use these to make drugs get into our body better.
I mean, I can see that point of view, but that does not seem like a good idea.
Yeah, and that's the conclusion they came up with, or at least in one study I read about it. But so they get to the brain, that's bad. Now, the big one... And this is why, like, if anybody comes to us with an autoimmune issue, we'll have them cut out things like this, is because lectins really cause an autoimmune issue. And you know about that, like, cellular mimicry and the body attacking itself.
Yeah, so especially when it comes to gluten, gluten is very similar to our thyroid. That's why most people that have some sort of autoimmune issue develop Hashimoto's, where our body's attacking its own thyroid, and they have to get their thyroid removed. The reason that's so prevalent in our society is because gluten is so prevalent in our society. So everybody's overloading on gluten, they get leaky gut, and now this gluten is getting attacked by our normal immune system. And then after that immune system's activated and attacking the gluten, it's like, oh, hey, there's still some more gluten. It's like, no, it's not. It's our thyroid. Stop. But it doesn't know that.
So no, it looks exactly the same.
So it attacks the thyroid next. Exactly. And that's pretty much how every autoimmune issue works. Pretty much you need leaky gut first. You get these foreign invaders. Immune system attacks it. And then it's like, looks around the body, what else looks like this? Yep. And then it starts attacking that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't know, like in ulcerative colitis, that your colon isn't this lectin, isn't this other invader. It's like, no, this is our colon, bro, leave me alone. But it doesn't know that. So you might be thinking, like, how much gluten really is in wheat? And I'm here to tell you, it's a shit ton. So 80% of the total protein in wheat is gluten. And that's one of the reasons wheat protein gets a score of 0.4 on the PDCAA scale, which is like a marker for protein-like efficiency. And 0.4 is like, that might as well be zero. Like, you can't live off that. That's like horrible. Something like an A gets a 1. And I brought up this scale specifically because I'm going to talk about it next week. This scale was designed to make soy look good. So I'm going to talk shit about this scale next week, even though I just used it for an example. But that's a different topic for another. Did you know that?
So what is it looking at? Just like the availability of amino acids?
Yeah, exactly. It has nothing to do with like absorption and stuff like that, right? Okay. And it's designed to make soy look good. The soy actually like industry came up with this scale. And it tops out at 1, so it doesn't let anything else go over 1. Even though something like eggs and beef would be. You know what I mean? But, so like soy gets a 1 on this scale. And if anything makes soy look good, the game's rigged. Okay? That's what I'm saying.
Well, especially if you're going to compare something like eggs
to soy. Yeah. You get the same score.
Not even close.
Thank you. Okay. At least you know that, but people don't. And you'll hear like vegans and talk about soy, so.
Eggs are the best bioavailability when it comes to proteins.
They are.
But also just talking about gluten and everything. Mm. Hey, if you have an autoimmune issue, most of the time you have to cut out eggs. It's not because you are sensitive to the eggs. It's because you have leaky gut, and those eggs will have that same molecular mimicry.
Yep.
So, hey, you might need to cut out eggs if you do have leaky gut.
That's true, and that sucks.
Yeah, I developed.
Don't blame the eggs, though.
Oh, it's not the eggs' fault.
It's not the eggs' fault.
Yeah. I was going through that about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, with eggs. Yeah. I mean, because eggs are delicious. I love them. But every once in a while, I just feel sick after eating them.
Yeah.
And now I eat, I don't know, 6 to 10 a day.
And you're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you healed.
Yeah, I just need my gut to heal.
Exactly. And so actually, before this podcast, you were talking about one of your friends who you knew was gluten sensitive.
Yeah, back in college, she had to eat gluten-free cookies, which were, I guess, not as good. I don't know. Like, I guess it's a different type of wheat. Her hands would swell up. She'd have a lot of other issues. Just inflammation overall. She'd just feel like crap after eating it.
Yeah, so you would assume that you can eat wheat and be fine, but she eats wheat and she's affected by the gluten, right?
Back then, that's what I thought.
Right, that's what most people would think, right? And someone who is affected by gluten, like, intensely, who have swollen appendages and things like that, they have, like, that's called celiac disease, right? Or they're very sensitive to gluten. But I looked at a study that tested celiac disease and people who didn't have celiac disease response to gluten. And guess what? Gluten messes up all of us. So celiacs are just more damaged to begin with than us, right? So that gluten really messes it up. But, like, it's called the intestinal barrier for a reason. It's supposed to protect us from the outside world, and gluten impairs the intestinal barrier in everybody. And here's a quote from that study. So, based on our results, we concluded that gliadin, and again, gliadin, we haven't mentioned that word yet, but when you break down wheat germ agglutinin, like, the body can break that down into something called gliadin, which is just another aspect of gluten that's really bad for you. So we conclude that gliadin activates zonulin signaling irrespective of the genetic expression of autoimmunity, leading to increased intestinal permeability to macromolecules. So what that's saying is that this gluten is causing everyone to have leaky gut, no matter if you have celiac disease or not. That's crazy.
Well, that's what it's designed to do.
It is. That's what it's designed to do. Yeah. So with this whole zonulin thing, I'm going to go into that. This is what makes gluten double bad for leaky gut. So I talked about earlier, lectins, what they do is they literally poke holes in our guts. And that's for all lectins, right? But gluten has a whole other aspect that makes it really bad for leaky gut. So gluten can get broken down partially into smaller parts called gliadin. And then gliadin binds to a receptor called CXCR3, which leads to the production of the molecule zonulin. And then zonulin leads to the breakdown of the tight junction proteins between the cells. And the tight junctions are designed to keep the cells close together and to prevent anything from slipping past them. So now the tight junction's gone, these lectins and bacteria get into the blood supply through the gaps in the tight junctions, reacting with the immune system. So lectins are a foreign compound, so our body turns on the immune response to get them out of the blood. So both ways lectins cause leaky gut. They break down these tight junctions and they literally poke holes in cells.
And they're sprayed with glyphosate, which does the same thing.
And glyphosate does the same thing. Yep, exactly.
It's no wonder why so many people have leaky gut nowadays and autoimmune issues are on the rise.
Yes, over 100 million people are suffering from autoimmune diseases.
Oh, I believe that.
And 100 million.
That's a third of our country.
Man, like, it's just crazy. And like what I was talking about earlier with pharmaceutical companies trying to harness the power of gluten to get drugs into the cell. The thing is, they found out is that even at very, very small dosages, like a dose inside a pill, can be very highly reactive in the body. So, like, it doesn't take a lot of wheat germ or gluten in to really cause trouble. So here's a quote from the study, scientists looking into helping drugs like get better absorbed. So here we show that a nanomolar concentration of wheat germ agglutinin is unexpectedly bioactive on immune cells. At nanomolar concentrations, wheat germ agglutinin stimulates the synthesis of pro-inflammatory cytokines, and thus the biology activity of wheat germ agglutinin should be reconsidered by taking into account the effects of wheat germ agglutinin on the immune system at the gastrointestinal interface. So even these people are like, oh shit, we have like a nanogram. A nanogram is nothing. And like, oh shit, this is really, this even this tiny amount is causing an immune response. We can't put this in drugs.
Well, it's probably that it's pro-inflammatory. So it's going to make the people that are taking it
worse.
Like, yeah, they're going to feel worse. Mm-hmm. Not only is it going to make them worse, but they're going to feel worse.
That's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if it didn't have that pro-inflammatory effect, they probably would do it. And then they would just make another pill that would take care of the other symptom.
Yeah.
But you can't create inflammation in the body. Nobody's going to take that pill.
That's true. Yeah. That's okay. And you know, that's so nefarious.
Oh, and I know. Yeah. I'm looking for the worst in these pharmaceutical companies.
But I believe it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's funny. When I read that, I took it as a positive. I was like, oh, that's a good little spin. You know what I mean? But I think the way you're thinking is right. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously after listening to an hour of this shit, you're like, why doesn't everyone have autoimmune disease then? Right. Even though a shit ton of people do. And so really, I was thinking like the Swiss cheese approach. So they all have to line up for these things to happen. So an autoimmune disease happens when all these factors line up. So you have genetics, and then you have leaky gut, and then you eat lectins, right? And so that's when like an autoimmune issue lines up. And as far as like genetics go, I was like, how come some people can eat this stuff and others can't? Like, what's really going on there? So there's something like about the sugars that we express on the outside of our cells. Like some of us just express different sugars, and different sugars bind to lectins differently. So some of us are just better off, honestly. And so here's a quote from a study. Partly because of biological variation in the glycoconjugates that coat our cells, and partly because these are protected behind a fine screen of sialic acid molecules attached to the glycoprotein tips. And that like sialic protein or that sialic acid is like, if you know anything about chromosomes, we have something called a telomere cap. So it's something that protects the end of our chromosomes. And you can think of that as the same thing on these glycoproteins and glycolipids. They have a sialic acid cap and it protects them from lectins. I'm like, okay, well, how do lectins get in there at all? Well, things can strip away that sialic acid cap. And here's another quote, but the sialic acid molecule can be stripped off by the enzyme neuraminidase, which is present in several microorganisms such as influenza and streptococci. So think of the flu or strep throat, like you get sick, those bacteria, those microorganisms can actually go around and strip off those sialic acid caps on those glycoproteins, leaving you open for more lectins to be bound to it. So this facilitation of lectins by microorganisms, oh, I love this quote, by the way. This is, I wonder if you're gonna like this. Because what's something we say to people when they get sick? Like, what's a tactic they should do when they get sick?
Fast.
Okay. We always say this, so I love this little quote, so I pulled it out. And they kind of like lightweight talk shit about it, but it's funny. So this facilitation of lectins by microorganisms, meaning like after you get sick, you're going to be more susceptible to the effects of lectins, throws a new light on the post-infectious diseases and makes a folklore cure of fasting during a fever seem sensible. That's so, a whole other angle for fasting while sick.
So basically, like, soup with crackers would be the wrong thing to do if you have the flu?
It would.
Mm-hmm. Even though that's everybody's go-to?
Go-to, yes, exactly. Yeah, salting crackers, man. It's like everyone says to eat that.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, chicken noodle soup. It's not the same thing without the crackers.
It's not. Oh, yeah, it's really not at all. Yeah. So for this podcast, I literally, like, went through a chart of all these different lectins. There are over 120 lectins. And it showed what sugars they actually want to bind to, what sugars they have the affinity towards. And so remember, every glycoprotein and glycolipid, which these lectins bind to, have a salicylic acid cap, which protects them. Guess what wheat germ likes to bind to? Just you want to take a random guess?
Would be sialic acid?
Sure does. So the even protective cap that is designed to protect these glycoproteins and glycolipids, wheat germ agglutinin or gluten attaches to that. It's just like, that makes gluten so bad.
Yeah, and again, like, and we're consuming gluten all throughout the day.
You have
your cereal in the morning, you get to work, there's a box of donuts. That's what this podcast was supposed to be about.
I know, yeah.
And yeah, it's just like all the way through.
And so, like, have there been studies showing that avoiding lectins can help with autoimmune diseases? And yes, there has been. So the study showing diet helping autoimmune diseases, so specifically these were like IBD, so irritable bowel syndrome, think of Crohn's, think ulcerative colitis. These are like diseases really based around a leaky gut. They called it the autoimmune protocol. So they avoided gluten, refined grains, sugar, legumes, nightshade, vegetables. Those are all like high in lectins. So think peppers, eggplants, tomatoes, chilies. So no eggs, no nuts, no seeds, no dairy. And they only studied 15 subjects, but 11 of the 15 subjects had clinical remission. That means like you had ulcerative colitis, now you don't. And the average duration of disease prior to this study was 15 years.
So diet is really powerful.
Man, just think like how many people go to the doctor today. They're going to go to the doctor today and get diagnosed ulcerative colitis and say, you're going to die with this. It's a lifetime.
Well, they're not going to tell them to cut out grains. I mean, that's the bottom of the food pyramid. You're supposed to eat them 6 servings a day or something crazy like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But 11 out of these people had these diseases for over 15 years, and they were cured. And just think of all the damage that occurs after 15 years. Like, how beat up is your body?
Oh, for sure. Well, I mean, like, if you're taking poison every day and then you stop taking the poison, I'm sure your symptoms will clear up.
Yeah. So I love it. I just wanted to end it there, like, food is medicine. Food is so powerful. Like, if you're suffering any sort of autoimmune issues, first off, don't eat a donut. Like, it's horrible, obviously, but just take back your health, man. Control what you eat and just watch yourself heal and watch yourself get better.
Yeah, no, we didn't talk about donuts a whole lot in this podcast. We mostly just talked about, like, the lectins. But it's just every single ingredient in a donut is just straight trash. It's just horrible for you in every single way possible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all the sugar in it, it's going to lead to some sort of chronic illness. The industrial seed oils are all poison. The lectins are just poking all these holes in your gut, so allowing all these other issues. And then along with that, with the leaky gut and all that sugar, now you're also creating a perfect scenario for like something like SIBO to occur. you're going to have some sort of overgrowth of some harmful bacteria in your gut microbiome.
You are.
And every single, like, disease starts in your gut microbiome. That's our, like, first line of defense. So if that's messed up, your health is going to be messed up.
Exactly. Yeah, you have to protect your gut. Like, that's why it's so important to avoid these foods. Like, it's just, like, it's something you've always said, when your mitochondria goes, everything goes. But that's, like, kind of the micro level. At the macro level, like, kind of a bigger scale. If your gut's not healthy, you're not healthy. Just straight up.
I think it's a quote by Hippocrates or some old, really smart guy.
Yeah.
Is food can either be the best medicine or the slowest poison. And that's where donuts fit in. Like, yeah, they are the slowest poison, but they're just straight poison.
They are just straight poison. They really are. Yeah, I guess after reading all these notes, I'm realizing I barely talked about donuts. But I don't know, man. I've been itching to talk about anti-nutrients for a very long time.
And oh, yeah, shows. We can tell.
I have been itching because I feel like I'm the only dude talking about this shit. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a huge resource on our website. Like, I'm going to have all these links. You can literally go down the rabbit hole I went down, and it might take you a while to read all of it, but it's worth it, man. Like, spread the word. Just educate yourself, man. That's the one thing you can do. Nobody can take that from you, you know? Learn and just improve your health and improve your diet. Well, did you have a tip of the week this week?
Yeah, you know, these are getting harder and harder to come up with.
Are they? We've done, what, 40 now?
Yeah, do it, what, every single week? Yeah, it's mm-hmm. getting a little bit tougher.
Yeah.
So I've been having this on the back burners for a while. You normally try to tie them in with the topic if I can. But the only, like, tip I could come up with this one is don't eat donuts.
Don't eat donuts, yeah.
Or I was thinking about coming up with, like, a healthy donut recipe, and I was like, you know what? There really isn't one.
You know, I looked up, just because, like, I Googled the ingredients of a Krispy Kreme donuts, and they literally promote the use of vegetable oils as a healthy thing.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Oh, we use soy oil and or canola oil, and I was like, oh, these bitches.
Well, because the government, like, that's for the government, stand. Yeah, that's what's safe. But I was, the only reason I didn't do a safe or, like, healthy one is just because that the combination of fat and carbs, no matter what, if you're having a donut, you're having a lot of fat and a lot of carbs, is just not healthy.
No.
So that's why I didn't come up with one. Is like, well, they're...
It doesn't matter if you use beef tallow.
Yeah.
Or almond flour.
Exactly. You can do better options, mm-hmm. but they're still not good. No. So that's why I didn't really come up with that.
And that's such a shame. I wish we had an answer for that.
And I honestly wouldn't, but they won't taste good.
You don't think so?
No.
Probably not.
I've had some stuff with almond flour and coconut flour, and it's not the same.
Okay.
I was like, oh, I'm going to eat something bad for me, I might as well just go.
I feel the same way. Like, if I'm going to cheat, I don't cheat with, like, diet ice cream. I'm going balls out. Like, just give me a tub of whatever.
And the good thing usually with that is my body hurts. Like, something...
You pay a price.
Yeah, so I'm just like, okay, don't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I got that reminder.
Yeah.
So this tip of the week is on blue light blockers. So, thanks to technology, we're able to do this podcast. We got computers, we got TV, like, we got all these, like, great things to keep us entertained all throughout the day. But all those luxuries, unfortunately, come with a cost, and it's usually the light that comes with it. So, if you're watching your TV at night, if you look at your wall right next to your TV, there's only one color you're going to see, and that's blue. And that's because the blue light coming from these screens are so much more harmful and so much more powerful than the other wavelengths. So blue light is good, but only during the day. So the blue light that we get from the sun helps us to produce serotonin. Once it gets dark, our body starts converting that serotonin into melatonin. That helps us fall asleep and to get into a state of deep sleep. That's where all our, like, quality recovery comes from. We need to get quality deep sleep. It doesn't matter how much sleep you get. If you're not getting into that deep sleep, you're really not getting all that full recovery. You're not getting your hormones balanced. You're not recovering from the day's stressors, workout, all that stuff. So getting exposure to blue light later in the day will disrupt your melatonin production and affect both the quantity and the quality of your sleep. And then poor sleep leaves our hormones all out of whack, resulting in low energy, cravings for sugary food, low sex drive, insulin resistance. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Oh, yeah, man, sleep is so important.
I mean, it's too important. I want to do a podcast on sleep, but that's going to have to be like a series.
Yeah, it will take forever.
Yeah, there's just so many just benefits to it. And we're still figuring out more and more. Like, we don't really have that. It's funny, we do a third of our lives sleeping, and we really don't have that full of, like, a grasp of how, like, important it really is.
Yeah, like, ask a doctor, like, what's a dream about? They'll be like, oh, your guess is as good as mine.
You might as well go see a psychic.
Yeah, you might as well go see a psychic, yep.
Yeah, so luckily there are ways to still enjoy the luxuries of our modern devices without being exposed to all the harmful effects of blue light at night. So most cell phones and computers, they come with a nighttime mode. I have mindset, so as soon as it gets dark outside, it goes into nighttime mode, and it doesn't come out of it until the sun rises, so it's from dusk till dawn. Do you have the same thing?
Same thing.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the easiest way to do it. If you don't, you can also download an app called Flux, F-L-U-X, and that'll do the same thing for your computer or your cell phone. TVs, I mean, you could turn the brightness down, but it's best to buy blue light blocking glasses. And this will help you just walking around all throughout your house. Put these on as soon as the sun goes down. I mean, you probably need lights on in your house. Best bet would be to turn off the lights in your house once it gets dark.
Get some candles.
Yeah, candlelight is a great way to go about it. But I mean, if you're not responsible enough to blow them out at night, you don't want to risk burning your house down. You know, you can get these blue light blocking glasses, turn off like your brightest light so you just have the essential lights on. You can still stay up watching TV, watching the playoffs, you know, whatever it is that you do at night. And these blue light blocking glasses will still increase your melatonin production. So that will be impacted slightly, but not as bad as just, you know, your body still thinking it's daylight.
And they're not expensive, right?
Oh, not at all. They're, you know, you can get a cheap pair for, I saw a 3-pack for $15 on Amazon. You can spend as much money as you want to on these.
Okay.
They are getting more and more popular. So it's like $5 to $100 if you want some designer ones.
Mm-hmm.
They come in all different styles. They used to just come like looking like safety glasses.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like really, really stood out, really made you look like a weirdo.
Yeah.
But now you can get some that'll make you look perfectly fine. The colored ones, they should be like a yellowish orange color. Those are the better ones. But there are some that come with like clear lenses. Those are not quite as effective, but they're still better than nothing.
Yeah.
That amber filtering like really filters out that blue light.
Okay.
I don't know how the clear ones work exactly. I'm not an expert on glass, but...
Yeah, me either.
Apparently, they still work. So, yeah, that's just a good way to do it. And then, also, like, when you're in your bedroom, that room should be pitch black. Cover up all sorts of lights, whatever you need to do. Wear a sleep mask if you need to. So that way, you know, you're not getting any form of blue light while you're sleeping. So, yeah, that's the tip of the week.
Yeah, I think that's a great tip. And, like, if anyone listens to the podcast knows and you know, like, I pride myself in... like covering all my gaps. Like I really, okay, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. Like I really want to make sure everything's optimal. I don't have a pair of glasses like this. I feel like that's a hole I need to fill.
Yeah, I don't either, but I've definitely been looking into it. I'm probably going to be getting some this week.
Are you really?
Yeah, definitely.
If you are, give me a pair or buy me a pair. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw, when I was looking, I saw like a nice little pack on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Because I don't really care how they look because I'm only going to wear them at home.
Would they fit over my glasses here?
There are some you can get that fit over normal glasses.
Okay, maybe you'll have to look into those, yeah, because I have to wear glasses if I'm going to watch TV or something like that, because I'm blind as a bat, so.
I mean, right now, it's summertime. I usually go to bed, and the sun's, like, just setting, so it's not that big of a deal, but, like, wintertime is when it's, like, really effective.
More important, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a good tip, man. There's so much. So avoid donuts and avoid all that damn blue light that's coming out. But yeah, another episode in the books. Next week, we're going to be talking about soy formula. And that's going to be my just attempt to completely destroy soy. So I'm going to do it. Trust me, I've been waiting to do this for a long time. If you can't tell, talking about lectins. I pretty much pulled all these lectin notes from the soy episode because lectins are on soy as well. Actually, I'm probably giving away too much information now. But yeah, tune in next week if you want to learn more about soy and how that sucks. But, yeah, you can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at TNT Wellness. So, feel free to reach out if you have any questions, comments, or concerns.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe to our podcast. You can find us on SoundCloud, Google Play, and, of course, Apple iTunes. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.